Call the next case.
A8, minor, et cetera, versus Church of God and Christ, Inc., et al., Christopher F. Day, John C. Nelson, Highlands Council, Tina M. Milo, Joseph B. Greener, John B. Year, William P. Wallace, Jay Starbiting, at the lead council.
Good morning, Your Honors, the Supreme Court of Virginia. I'm Christopher Day. May it please the court of the law firm of Juris Day. It's my great privilege to introduce to you Drew Von Bargen of the law firm of Soloff from Cervanos in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, who's been previously admitted pro acquis chief.
All right, thank you very much. Where are you from, Mr. Van Bargen?
Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
Well, welcome. We're glad to have you here.
Glad
you may
to be
proceed.
Here. Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Drew Von Bargen, and I, along with local counsel Christopher Day, represent plaintiff appellant A.H. in this case. As you may already know, A.H. was a young girl who, from the ages of 4 through 7, was sexually abused and molested by a gentleman by the name of Donald Phillips. He was a deacon, youth leader, and drill team coach within her church. Years prior to the sexual molestation, another youth victim came forward and disclosed that she, too, had been sexually molested by the same individual, Donald Phillips. As alleged in our complaint, this is a fact that the church defendants were aware of through their employees and agents by way of the criminal investigation and social service investigation that ensued thereafter.
Let me stop you right there because,
sure,
as best I can tell, are you saying that the church was aware of it because his wife knew about it?
Now, if you look at the complaint, we've made allegations that there were employees and agents of the church defendants that were also aware. Of course, we haven't pled specifics of names and who learned about it and where they learned of it and things of that nature, but it's my understanding based upon the case law that we don't have to prove our case at the pleading stage. We've sufficiently alleged facts that there were employees and agents who became aware of it as a result of the criminal and social service investigations that took place.
I thought it was a little bit odd in your pleading. You talked about his wife and or other people involved in the church being aware of it.
Sure.
They believed that she might be the only one in the church who was aware of it.
Sure. We did plead that there were other employees and agents who were aware of it.
But when you put or, it seemed to me it meant kind of perhaps.
Sure. I understand that. I mean, the extent to which other additional individuals were aware of it is not presently known. Of course, we haven't had the opportunity to take discovery, but it's my understanding that there were other individuals in addition to the wife. But when you bring that up, correct, the wife, who was also an employer agent of the church defendants, was aware of it. She was aware of it. She was a licensed missionary within the church and served a role within that particular church. She wasn't just a member.
What does it mean, excuse my ignorance, to be a licensed missionary of this church? Is that like a employee? I mean, is it like a person on staff there who gets paid to do what they do? Was it a volunteer position?
Sure. The extent to which she gets paid or not paid, I'm not sure. I don't believe that matters. But it is a specific carved-out role within the church where she is responsible for doing a number of different services on behalf of the church. She goes out to homes on behalf of the church, meets with people. She goes to prisons. She meets with people. She does a number of activities on behalf of the church and in service of the church's purpose.
So it would be like an officer of the church as opposed to a staff member. We don't know, or you don't know.
Well, I don't know whether it's an officer or staff position. You know, what I do know is that she is an employer agent of the church, you know, operating on their behalf and doing a number of activities in furtherance of their objectives.
Would it be the same thing if she was just a member going out to someone's home to deliver Bible study or whatever, or is there some significance to the term licensed missionary?
I think if she was just a church member, then it certainly would be different, but that's not what we've alleged in our complaint.
I understand. I'm just trying to, I think, as Justice Goodwin, get a handle on what is the significance of licensed missionary.
Right,
yeah,
because,
sure.
I'm sorry. I was just going to say, for all I know, in this church, everyone who's a member is a licensed missionary, and part of your responsibility is to go out and evangelize. I don't know.
Well, I don't think every member of this particular church is a licensed missionary. I think it's a specific role that they carve out. But again, going back to my previous point, our our complaint, as we have alleged it, is that she's not the only person who became aware of this information. Of course, she's one name that was listed in the complaint, but she is not the only employer agent that we have alleged our complaint to be aware of.
You did identify her, did you not, as an agent for purposes of imputed knowledge to the principal?
Yes, she was one of the agents for purposes of imputing knowledge.
I was going to say, you know, you said she was one, but you don't name anybody else that I can tell.
Or
identify even by office or by, you know, like incidents of how they might have become knowledgeable about this.
Well, you named the pastor, not by name, but by role.
But no. You didn't say he knew about this.
I think it's on page 56 of the joint appendix where that paragraph is, and it alleges that the pastor of Gospel Tabernacle, here's the part that he was talking about previously, and or COGIC, met with the victim and her family, as well as Billups and Donna.
Yeah, I would agree with that, that you know, there was a pastor.
That was in 2011.
That was a subsequent incident.
That's right.
But there was also, you know, again, as alleged, there were other employees, agents who were aware of it. And as this court knows, the standard on reviewing a demurrer is that we have to accept as true all well-pled facts. And this court's holding in Cater Corp versus Catering Concepts guides us that we don't need to descend into the who, the what, the where, and the how. We don't need to identify all the individuals who gained knowledge of this prior incident, other than to say that there were prior agents and employees of the church defendants who became aware of it. Back to what I was saying previously, after they had become aware of this prior incident, they continued to allow Donald Billups.
There's a prior allegation. One thing I'm trying to figure out is the complaint doesn't allege he was found criminally culpable. The investigation yielded a outcome that he had in fact done these things. What it alleges is a victim came forward and disclosed that this had happened. This is in 2003. Well, the incident occurred in 2002. The disclosure is 2003. We fast forward to years later. So we have one incident of a disclosure, but seemingly no criminal resolution, civil lawsuits, civil resolution. I'm trying to figure out where we draw the line of a single complaint, not multiple complaints, and then on the face of the complaint, no findings of actual culpability. Now, in hindsight, we see that that's the case. Is that enough? I mean, to someone comes forward, makes this allegation, you have to pull the person back forever, basically, and they can never have any kind of responsibilities like this person had.
Well, a couple of things to your point. Number one, there was never a finding that he didn't do these things. He was never found not guilty, so that wasn't a disposition that had been made in that particular prior incident, number one.
Right.
Number two, there's nothing more important than the safety and protection of kids. This is notice of a risk within the church. You cannot wait until there is a criminal conviction that has a much higher standard of proof to begin protecting.
No, I understand that, but even like a civil complaint and adjudication there, or even a report that says yes or whatever. I mean, we're just left to speculate. Someone came for all we know. Did she withdraw? Did she recant? It's on the face of the complaint, it's a bare allegation. And I understand your point, and that may be where we have to draw the line. But it is different than some of these other scenarios.
I would agree that there is a distinction there, but I would submit that it's not a material distinction in the context of this particular case when it relates to the safety and protection of children. If nothing else, the church defendants could have allowed him to continue as a deacon, but not specifically serve as a youth leader where he continued to have ongoing unfettered access to children, where he wasn't being properly supervised.
Well,
there were certainly things...
If Donna Billups has been properly alleged as an agent for purposes of imputing knowledge to the principal of the church, assuming that's true, what have you alleged that she knew about that earlier incident? That she... she knew this was going on, this is what, Don will be Don, or some remark like that. So isn't the real issue, what is the allegation of the imputed knowledge coming to the principal from its agent, Donna, who is actually participating on a daily basis with this gentleman?
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with you. We have alleged that she was aware of the prior incident.
Okay. So if in fact you get an imputation to the principal, you don't need 15 other witnesses.
I would agree with you, but I'm saying that the reality is that there are, in our belief, other witnesses who are aware of what had occurred previously in 2002 and 2003.
Right, right. Can I change the subject there factually?
Sure.
Did you specifically allege that the abuse to your client, the sexual abuse to your client, occurred during church-related programs sponsored by the church, as opposed to just parishioners seeing each other in non-church-related activities?
I did. Our complaint does specifically allege that the abuse that occurred to A.H. occurred while she was engaged in these youth programs that Donald Billups was in charge of, including the drill team activities that he was a coach of. So our complaint does specifically allege that paragraphs 30, 56, and 58 of our amended complaint do specifically state that.
What about the facts concerning what these activities entailed? The thing I couldn't or did not see in the complaint was any allegation of the children being placed in the custody of anyone else. I mean, they were doing these activities, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they were in the custody of the person that was controlling those activities.
I'm not sure I understand the question, but I
think... Like, a kid could be on a drill team, but all the parents are standing there when the drill team is practicing. So that's not really like the kid is like being alone with this person or in this person's custody, or they've assumed responsibility for protection of the child.
You're
just
about
drilling the kid, you know,
talking about the church.
For drill tank purposes.
Well, I mean, the analogy would be like if you brought your kid to school and you dropped your kid off at school.
Bingo.
Or the daycare.
Bingo. The whole thing about dropping the kid off, I didn't see any allegation that even happened.
Well, of course, that's how she got there. You know, the parents brought her to these church functions, these drill team practices. And that's how she got there. She was dropped off.
Okay, well, you don't tell us that.
Okay.
The mere fact of the abuse would tend to indicate that there was at least sometimes when he was outside of the presence of other people with her.
I would agree, and that's precisely the problem, that the abuse occurred when there was no proper supervision or oversight being done. Of course, you know, it would be an even greater problem for the church defendants if they were sitting there watching it happen, no doubt about that. You know, the reality is that the parents brought her to these events, that she attended these church programs, that the church defendants, by their own policies and procedures, explicitly state that they are going to have full control and oversight of any church-related activity, both their members and those who are carrying out their programs. And that is, again, something that's specifically stated within the church defendant's own policies and procedures, that any time an activity is taking place that relates to the church program and their activities, that they are responsible for everyone involved in those programs. I see that I have about a minute and 45 seconds. I'd like to reserve that for rebuttal, please.
That would be fine. Now, let me ask the appellees this question. Do I pronounce it right, Miolo? Milo. Do you and Mr. Yore actually represent different appellees?
Yes, I represent the national denomination.
All right. The clerk will put the time on the clock for Ms. Miolo for 8 minutes and Mr. Yore for 7.
Thank you so much. May it please the court, my name is Tina Milo. I represent Church of God in Christ, the national denomination. I would like to start off by just pointing out that the amended complaint does not allege that the abuse took place during church-related activities, other than a conclusory allegation that the abuse occurred at Mr. Billups' home outside of the church, and then goes on to say during church-related activities. There's no fact or specification of what church-related activities could possibly...
So it happened at the home?
It happened at the
home. And it's alleged that whatever went on at the home was a church-related activity, and we need to know if it was a study of a Philippians or a cornball toss or whatever. We need to know more specifics than that?
Yes, we do, Your Honor.
Why?
Because there's reference in the record of the underlying testimony in 2012. And the reason for the visit to the home was a sledding.
Is this in the complaint?
It was not, but it was referenced in the complaint and addressed in the underlying record.
So we're in a demur. Demur is granted. All right.
Understood. But I make that point to demonstrate why we need the additional facts. And yes, Virginia is a
discovery
is
pleading. For. It's not what granting a demur is for.
Understood. But conclusory allegations are not enough, even under a notice pleading. It's not enough to simply state that Don Billups, for example, was an employee of the national denomination located in Memphis, Tennessee, that has 12,000 churches in 63 countries and 6.5 million members.
That's a fact. It could be absolutely inaccurate, but that's a fact.
But it needs to be properly alleged to satisfy demur.
So does he need W-2s to satisfy demur?
No, but you have to allege control. There has to be some allegation that the national church controlled the day-to-day activities of Mr. Billups.
That's how you prove it. But you mean to say that for vicarious liability, you can't have a single sentence in a complaint that says this client or the tortfeasor was an employee of the corporation I'm now suing, acting in the scope of his employment. That's not enough. You've got to give more information than that.
I believe so, in a case where you're dealing with a national denomination and not the local church. If we're sitting, I mean, it could be analogous to a franchisor and a franchisee. The local church is separately incorporated.
Well, so that would be why we have a trial, is to find out if the allegation is false. And if it is, and it's sanctionably false, there are remedies for that.
But the allegations have to be supported by material fact. That has been the court's rulings, even though this is a notice pleading jurisdiction. It's not enough just to say there's a duty and that duty was breached. There have to be facts to support
duty is a
that.
Conclusion of law. Whether someone is an employee is an allegation of fact that's governed by law.
I understand that, and that's not the only issue we have before us.
Go back to the question. I'm sorry.
Counsel, I was just going to say, in a different context, this court has some rather significant experience in the relationship of a local church to a national denomination. And it is not only fact-specific, it's denomination-specific. A Baptist church and the Southern Baptist Convention is far different than a Catholic church and the diocese and the going up the ladder, or than the Episcopal church and the Episcopal Church of the United States of America. So it is a factual inquiry. You can't just simply say yes or no based upon the fact that there is an individual church and a national or an international denomination.
I completely agree with the facts of you, as you've said, but we're talking about proper pleading here.
It would seem that they've pled as much as somebody can plead. That you can't file a FOIA request on the Church of God in Christ. You've got to go ahead and do the notice pleading, and then determine whether you can actually prove it.
Would you move past facts and talk about conclusory allegations?
Absolutely. For example, in this case, the allegation is that the denomination in some way had a duty to protect from the criminal acts of a third party to the child of this case. And no one here is disputing the egregiousness of what happened. But when you're dealing with the denomination in Memphis, Tennessee, and there's no duty at law, because there are five categories recognized as law, this does not fall in one of them.
This is not a special relationship?
As a matter of law, correct. So the next step is it based on fact?
Why is it not a special relationship as a matter of law?
Well, the five categories that were recognized by this court, the only one that would even be close to relevant would be, well, two. There'd be employer-employee, assuming that it's properly pled. But this court has also acknowledged that in that case, the duty is to the employer to protect the employee. not the third
party. Are you familiar with Justice Lemon's opinion in the Bruton Parish case in 1997?
Bruton Parish is completely different.
Why?
Well, in that case, we're dealing with a babysitting service at the church, run by the church, where the children were invited in, they took control of those children, and then gave access to those infants, and they were infants in that case, to a known individual with sexual proclivity.
So the two distinctions that I'm hearing are that this is a minor rather than an infant, and that it was at the church employee's home rather than the church building itself. Are there other distinctions that you would want to bring to our attention?
Well, I don't want to make too much of a distinction between child and infant. A minor is a minor, in my mind. But the degree of control is a major issue. That is a distinction. It was Garcia versus J&B Trucking. It was a Norfolk case, properly said. Once a trucker enters the highway, the control of the employer, it stops because you're no longer under the control of the supervisor. In this case, we have a pastor who there's really no reason for us to know that he was even welcoming children in their home.
Well, if the knowledge is imputed to you under imputation principles by an agent, and the principal is charged with knowledge that where there's no actual knowledge, it's constructive knowledge, then that's how they close the loop in theory, legally.
But we're making an inference here that someone who's conducting criminal activity, or his wife, who would have just cause to hide that information, actually imputed it to the employer.
There's no such thing as actually imputed. Imputed is a legal fiction.
Understood. Okay. I misspoke. But what we have here is someone conducting criminal acts at his home, outside of the control of either church party.
We're not talking about imputing his criminal acts to his principal. We're talking about the failure of the principal to act to protect a later victim based upon the absence of investigation, based upon the absence of even asking the man if it happened.
Okay, so I assume from your question, please correct me if I'm wrong, that we're moving on to the 2002-2003 allegation. That, as far as it's been pled, was an allegation that Donna Billups knew. There's no allegation. In fact, it seems to be the contrary, that she never reported it. And if she did report it, it would have been to her supervisors, not to the National Church. But even if she had, it was an allegation that was being investigated by the authorities with no further action.
Did the church do any investigation whatsoever?
I'm not sure if the local church did. I'll defer to Mr. Ure for that. But even if they had, Age Rockingham has said one prior assault, well, in that case, it was three priors in 5 years. And they said that is not enough to create a jury question as to foreseeability. So in this case, we have one allegation. It's not even a conviction or any action, further action taken by the authorities. That even
so
if you impute that
knowledge. So a science school teacher is accused of violent rape and it's just an allegation. You don't think that a principal in charge of that agent has a duty to go to the person and say, did you violently rape that child? To do anything to investigate it?
Assuming knowledge?
No, assuming imputed knowledge.
His wife is the only person to witness it.
Right, and her appeal was denied and her demurrer was granted. So I don't think we can make the jump that her behaviors were wrong, illegal, or that she did anything negligent. Her behavior is not at issue in this case.
Well, it's not negligence, it's imputed knowledge.
Understood. But if her knowledge is imputed, is it imputed to the National Church, which is what we have at issue here?
Oh, sorry, I've taken you over.
Oh, no, that's quite all right. You continue your question if you want to.
I'm good. Thank you, Chief.
All right, your time has expired.
Oh, thank you.
Mr. Ure? You all, I think, realize that when you represent a separate party, the fact that one lawyer has gone over doesn't encroach on your time. That's why we do it that way. So you have the full 7 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. And may it please the Court, John Ure for Gospel Tabernacle, which is the local little church in Covington where these folks were members. A number of questions have come up. One was exactly what information was Donna Billups, the wife is she alleged to have? And it's in paragraph 39, 40, 41 on Joint Appendix 50, 51. It is alleged that Donna Billups, paragraph 40, became aware of the accusations of sexual contact with a minor made against her husband in 2002. That is the extent of the alleged knowledge.
Okay, let's suppose that, in theory, which you're not conceding, is imputed to the church under typical vicarious imputation principles. Wouldn't that, if there is a special relationship, wouldn't there be a duty to investigate, a duty to determine anything? And if there was the slightest credibility, the duty to remove him from access to potential victims in the future?
The problem, Your Honor, I think in the abstract, probably yes, Your Honor. But the problem is, it is purely imputed knowledge, because it is also alleged that she did not notify the church. And well, so under the facts, they didn't know. And to this is not alleged in the complaint, Your Honor, but so far as we know, the church did nothing because it knew nothing. When it later found out, in 2011, that Billups, that the man had abused yet a different girl in the church. But there is allegation and discussion in the record that the church did call a meeting of the family and did react to that. But there is no allegation that the church, not knowing, means they couldn't. There was no basis upon which to
the church, of course, is an association. It's a legal...
Yes.
It's a legal construct of people. But I hear what everyone is saying, but unless you can help me out with this, none of it makes sense to me, because whenever we're dealing with an organization, the law of imputed knowledge works. And the fact that some lower employee is covering up, you know, some defect in the drug that the manufacturer is putting out means nothing. So if in fact Donna's been, if in fact it's been pled that Donna had actual knowledge in the context of a special relationship, then it doesn't matter that the principal who receives that legal fiction of imputed knowledge doesn't actually know. Right? What am I missing?
I think, Your Honor, probably only the practical effects that imputed knowledge is fiction.
Well, it's been around for a long time.
It has, Your Honor. And, of course, this agent, alleged agent with imputed knowledge, has been absolved of all liability. So,
well, that's
that which is
completely irrelevant.
Well, that's...
And the allegation also is, as opposing counsel pointed out, I mean, they don't name names, but it is broader than simply the wife of Mr. Billups. So I don't know if we need to focus laser-like on her, do we?
Well, she is the only source of alleged knowledge. And
but that's not what the complaint says.
Yeah, well,
no, she's only one named.
It's the only possible factual assertion of knowledge. Everything else is, we would submit, a purely conclusory allegation mimicking the language in the case law, but not supported by any fact of record.
All right, so what takes us outside? I mean, this is tricky in the sense that it's one thing when you're an employee, you know, you're paid and you have a certain scope of responsibility. But with something like a church, you have someone who teaches Sunday school 1 hour a week, or who is a hospital visitor, or who, so there's, in some sense, there's an agency relationship, but that the complaint seems to springboard from that limited volunteer role into anything, you know, you're at all times treated as in a classical agency sense. Yes, is there some authority to help us navigate those lines?
I think there is. I don't know of a particular authority, except that scope of agency is, of course, a factual question, Your Honor, but a broad allegation that the wife, a licensed missionary, knew of accusations against her husband. There's no allegation that those accusations involved the church, anybody, and in fact they didn't, but they were unassociated with the church. But she became aware, is the allegation of the accusations from a prior, a different situation, and she failed to inform the church. But
is that the only person that you think is adequately pled?
I beg your pardon?
Is that the only person adequately identified?
Yes, sir.
Let me ask you, outside of the facts of this case, just so that we make it a generic thing, if somebody said that the Chief Justice of the Commonwealth of Virginia did X, is it an improper pleading that they didn't say it was Donald W. Lemons?
No, Your Honor, but you would be identified by your title, by your unique
title.
Well,
if somebody says the pastor was there, aren't you identified by your title?
Yes, Your Honor, but that allegation about the pastor has to do with after the situation became aware, not the 2002-2003. That's a meeting that occurred after a third incident in 2003.
Did any of these people take the responsibility under the statutes of the Commonwealth of reporting to proper authorities what they learned?
There was no report of the 2002-2003 because, as we set out in the brief, that is an allegation that whatever incident provoked that was being investigated, and the statute does not require a re-report that we understand you're investigating, we want to report that you are investigating. And in fact, counsel, in oral argument before the trial court, disclaimed saying that's what we need, what you need to do. It disclaimed saying that you need to report that you understand there's an investigation. Counsel said he thought the statute required a report that Billups had access to small children, but that is not a fact covered by the statute. The statute requires
actually would not be a significant enough allegation. It has to be someone in a loco parentis kind of relationship, like a teacher and a coach.
Your Honor. And, Your Honor, I see my time has expired.
Well, go ahead and finish your answer.
The answer was simply going to be that the judge who tried this case is the one who tried the Virginia Tech case, and in the oral argument, he identified this one 2002-2003 incident as the only thing in this record that could create either the special relationship or the heightened level of foreseeability that are prerequisites to liability in this situation. And I believe, in light of his experience in the Virginia Tech case, which this court, of course,
decided. Well, I think we had a lot of experience with that case, too.
Yes, you do. And I think, looking at that opinion, he looked at this record and said, one accusation of possible sexual abuse in 2002 was not enough to create tort liability.
All right. Thank you very much. Rebuttal?
Thank you. The one thing that I really want to highlight is that in addition to Donald Billups serving within the church as a licensed missionary, our complaint also does allege that she also served as a drill team coach assistant, and that in her role in doing that, she provided rides for the children to get to and from these drill team practices and events. So the complaint, and that's in paragraphs 23 and 25, does go beyond her just being a licensed missionary. So she's a licensed missionary as well as a drill team coach assistant. So she wore a number of hats within that organization. The idea that imputed knowledge is a legal fiction is just not correct. This court has recognized in Infant C versus Boy Scouts of America that precise concept.
It's not that it's a fiction and that it doesn't exist. It's that it exists, and we don't mind calling it a fiction.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly recognized, without a doubt. Opposing counsel is essentially asking this court to take all of the factual allegations in our complaint, treat them as false, and take everything that they're saying and treat it as true. That is taking the rule and reversing it. That is not how this court is supposed to be looking at this issue, and I would submit that the lower court, in dismissing every cause of action in this complaint, made the incorrect decision, and that if we're going to take child safety seriously moving forward, that we need to hold everyone accountable, not just perpetrators, but those who enable the abuse to occur. Thank you.
Call the next case.